Hello again, this is Debbie with the second part of the Herald and Review Decatur for Wednesday, November 11th, 2015, starting as usual part two with the death notices. Decatur, Davis, Howard Kenneth. Howard Kenneth Kenny Davis, 97, a Decatur, passed away on Saturday, November 7, 2015, in Mweequa Nursing and Rehabilitation. The funeral service celebrating Kenny's life will be at 2 p.m. Thursday, November 12th, in Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be 1 hour prior to service in the funeral home. Entombment will be at the Star of Hope Mausoleum in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to Central Christian Church. Decatur, Van Hoodnos, Carol Louise. Decatur, Carol Louise Van Hoodnos, 80, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, November 8, 2015, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. Mass, a Christian burial to celebrate Carol's life, will be at 1 p.m. Friday, November 13, 2015, at St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic Church on Edward Street in Decatur with Reverend Richard Welton, celebrant. Private burial, family burial, will be at St. Elizabeth Cemetery in Thomasboro. Memorials are suggested to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. Decatur, Fletcher, Betty. Betty, Jean Fletcher, 72, went to be with our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ November 9th, 2015 at Decatur Memorial Hospital with her family by her side. Services celebrating her life will be held at 12 noon Friday, November 13th at Antioch Missionary Baptist Church with visitation 1 hour before service. Burial, Macon County Memorial Park. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Service. Decatur, Fritz, Richard H. Beloved Dr. Richard H. Fritz passed at home on Saturday, November 7, 2015. A memorial service will be held 11 o'clock in the morning on Friday, November 13th at First United Methodist Church with the visitation at the church Thursday, November 12th from 4 to 7 in the evening. Decatur, Lugton, Pauline T. Pauline Polly T. Lugton, 81, of Decatur, went to be with the Lord on the day of her birth, November 8, 2015, in McKinley Court, surrounded by her family. Mass, a Christian burial, will be at 10 a.m. Friday, November 13th, in Our Lady of Lourdes Catholic Church. Visitation will be from 5 to 7 Thursday, November 12th, with liturgical prayers recited at 4:30 p.m. at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials may be directed to the Cancer Care Institute on West McKinley Avenue in Decatur. Decatur, Park, Kenneth H. Kenneth H. Park, 98, Decatur, World War II Navy veteran and retired coach, died Friday, November 6, 2015. Services, 11 a.m. Wednesday, Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home, visitation 1 hour before service, burial, Star of Hope Mausoleum, Graceland Cemetery. Hammond, Adams, Leora B. Leora B. had Adams, Leora B. Adams, 92, of Hammond, Illinois, passed away Sunday, November 8th, at the Arthur Home in Arthur. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home. Funeral services will be at 10:30 a.m. Friday, November 13th, at Laplace Church of the Brethren, with visitation from 5 to 7, Thursday, November 12th, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur. Burial will be at Laplace Cemetery, Laplace, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Lord's Storehouse, Laplace Church of the Brethren, or Heifer International. And that's the end of the death notices published in today's Herald and Review. A few more shorts. Decatur, Sangamon canoe trip, a guided canoe trip down the Sangamon River, will be offered by the Macon County Conservation District from 1 to 4 Saturday, November 21st. Participants should bring a drink and bring clothes that can get wet. There must be at least one adult per canoe and no more than two adults and two children per canoe. The fee is $25 per canoe. Register by Friday, November 20th at the Macon County Conservation Organization. Homestretch screening. A screening of the documentary The Homestretch will be at 7 p.m. Thursday, November 19th in the Avon Theater on Water Street. Panelists for a discussion following the film are Mary Garrison, Associate Professor of Social Work at Millikan, Amy Still, Director of Clinical Services at Webster Cantrell Hall, Darsonia Switzer, Program Director of Homeward Bound, Jody Tull, Homeless Liaison for Decatur Public Schools, and Jania Lawler, Juvenile Justice Program Supervisor, and Marley Lead, Youth Housing Assistance Worker, both of Youth Advocate. Tickets are free but required for admittance. They're available at Homeward Bound on Clay Street or by calling 362-7700. The event is a National Hunger and Homelessness Awareness Week activity sponsored by the Decatur-Macon County Homeless Council Continuum of Care. A Crime in Courts article by Huey Freeman of the Herald and Review. Domestic violence arrests made after 9/11 call traced. Decatur. Early the morning of October 15th, a 9/11 dispatcher received a phone call during which the caller said nothing before the phone went dead. After the dispatcher traced the call to an address on South Shores Drive, an officer was sent to the residence. As Macon County Sheriff's Deputy Timothy Hoffman approached the front door, he heard the back door open and slam shut. Immediately after, I heard coming from the southeast corner window a male voice yelling and a female voice screaming. Hoffman wrote in an affidavit, I opened the southeast back door and yelled, Sheriff's Office. A bathroom door opened. A male emerged from the room. Hoffman heard a woman screaming and crying in the bathroom. Help me, she said. The man identified as Damone S. Newburn, 22, was handcuffed and placed in the deputy's squad car. The woman said she'd been sending text messages when Newburn became upset and began to push her and hit her until he got her cell phone. Then she called 911 with her home phone. He hung the phone up. Newburn then grabbed his taser and threatened to shock her with it, he said. He took all the phones and left in his truck. Returning a short time later, he dragged her in a bedroom by her hair and turned the TV volume up so the children wouldn't hear. Give me that password to your cell phone, or I'm going to kill you and bash your head in the glass door, he told her. Then he grabbed her by the neck, hit her in the head, spit in her face, and on her clothes. After she gave him the password, he saw the phone number, got mad again, and hit her and bit her several times on the shoulder and pulled her hair as she was trying to wipe spit off her face. In her petition for an emergency order of protection, granted that afternoon by a judge, the victim wrote that Newburn had also kicked her in the head, choked her, and grabbed a pillow and held it over my face as I fought back to breathe. Then he held her on the floor and spit on her face 10 or 20 times until I had so much spit I couldn't see. The victim wrote that recently Newburn kicked her while she was 7 months pregnant, dumped a bucket of hot water and bottle of laundry detergent at her head, and threatened to take her baby away and beat her to death. Newburn, who was released on $900 cash bail October 17th, was charged Tuesday with domestic battery, violation of order of protection, and disorderly conduct. He is due in court for arraignment on Tuesday. End of the article. Local information here in continuing still with a section. Cuts announced at Mattoon Lamp Plant by Rob Shroud, a lead news service writer. Mattoon. General Electric Lighting has announced that approximately 50 employees will be cut from the workforce at the Mattoon Lamp Plant this fall. GE spokeswoman Megan Lavelle said via email that the reduction in force has been necessitated by market forces and declining global demand for conventional lighting products. She said the job cuts will impact approximately 50 of the plant's 225 employees, effective during the next few weeks. We take these decisions very seriously, and this action is necessary to respond to decreasing demand for conventional lighting like halogen products as consumers shift to LED technology at an increasing rate, Lavelle said. The Mattoon Lamp Plant is located at 1501 South 19th Street and has been in operation for more than 60 years. Lavelle said the Mattoon Lamp Plant makes components and halogen burners that go into 40, 60, 75, and 100-watt replacement halogen light bulbs known as energy-efficient soft white. Most of the impact of the reduction in force will be on the energy-efficient soft white burner production lines and their corresponding support functions, Lavelle said. GE announced plans in August 2013 to add 30 jobs at Mattoon Lamp Plant to staff two new lines producing components of energy-efficient soft white light bulbs as part of a $10 million investment in this facility. GE also announced similar investments at two plants in Ohio at the time. We ramped up capacity to make the soft white bulbs in response to demand from our retail customers, Lavelle said. As the lighting industry navigates through these unprecedented technology shift to LED, demand for conventional products like halogen is softer than originally forecast just a few years ago. Lavelle said employees impacted by this action will be eligible to file for unemployment insurance and or GE's Income Extension Aid, IEA. IEA allows an employee to receive payments from GE that, when added to government unemployment benefits, provide 90% of an employee's normal weekly pay. Additionally, Lavelle said affected employees will be eligible to access other GE benefits, including tuition reimbursement, job retaining benefits, retraining benefits, and continued insurance and medical and dental benefits for themselves and their covered dependents. Lakeland College has partnered with the Mattoon Lamp Plant in recent years to offer an industrial maintenance training certificate program for employees at the facility. Next article. National and International. Victoria's Secret Lingerie Show hits 20-year mark. This is it's an AP out of New York. Some light up, others are pretty and pink, and still more burst forth like fireworks. Yes, Tuesday was Victoria's Secret Sex Pot Angel Time, though the masses will have to wait till 9 p.m. on December 8th to watch the 20th annual Lingerie Extravaganza on CBS. This is just the taping, including musical performances by The Weeknd, Ellie Goulding, and Selena Gomez after Rihanna abruptly canceled. Veteran V.S. walkers such as Lily Aldridge and Alessandra Ambrosio will be joined by newbie angels including Martha Hunt and Elsa Hosk. Kendall Jenner and Gigi Hadid are among the non-winged supermodels new to the glitzy show that generates weeks of advance buzz. In all, 47 models were scheduled to strut the runways in 75 looks at a Manhattan Armory later Tuesday. But first, there was hair and makeup to be done and a pink carpet of celebrity hosts to be walked. End of what we're reading of that article. Starbucks causes stir with cup design. Another AP article out of New York. It's as red as Santa's suit, a poinsettia, or your neighbor's ugly Christmas sweater. Yet Starbucks' stark new holiday coffee cup has set off complaints that the chain is making war on Christmas. The outcry, which gained an intensity after Donald Trump suggested boycotting the coffee chain, illustrates the fine line companies must walk during the all-important holiday season. They want to stand out from their competitors, but not go so far as to offend or unsettle. The challenge is that the holiday language which is same for everything, said Alan Adamson, founder of the brand Simple Consulting. Everyone does it, so how do you do it in a way that's distinctive? If you push too far with distinctiveness, you might end up ruffling feathers. Since 1997, Starbucks has offered holiday drinks in a festive red cup adorned with such things as Christmas ornaments, reindeer, and snowflakes. This year's design is minimalist, vivid red with nothing but the familiar green Starbucks logo. Starbucks executives said they wanted to embrace simplicity and quietness and show that the coffee shops are a sanctuary during the holidays. The company also reminded customers that it's selling its Christmas blend of coffee as usual this year. But some religious conservatives say the new cup is an affront to tradition and yet another example of what some have called the war on Christmas, taking religion out of the Yuletide season by doing such things as greeting customers with happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas. On Twitter, where the topic became a sensation, some people were upset over the cup, while others said they didn't understand what the big deal was. Trump weighed in on Monday by saying, maybe we should boycott Starbucks, he added. If I become president, we'll all be saying Merry Christmas again. That I can tell you. At a Starbucks in downtown Los Angeles that was decked out with decorations touting the Christmas blend, customer Ray Velasco said he didn't give much thought to how companies market during the holidays, especially when it's barely November. There's so much going on in the world, I just can't pay attention to every controversy, he said. End of that article. And now, Stu Ellis, All They Want Is Farmland. When he saw Tuesday's U.S. Department of Agriculture crop report numbers, Windsor farmer Matt Bennett fortuitously said, "If there's any land auctions today, I'm going to step out on a limb and call it a buyer's market type of day." Bennett also is a commodity trading advisor and broker, and when he saw the bearish market numbers flowing out of the USDA's November crop production and supply-demand reports, it was obvious to him that farmers wouldn't be bidding up land prices based on commodity prices. There's quite a bit of irony in Bennett's observations, due to the fact that a bundle of central Illinois farmland is being sold privately to a real estate investment trust. Based on acreage and closing price, it was a buyer's market. In fact, at the average of $8,834 per acre, that is just over half of some of the top prices that were seen in the past couple of years, although $16,000 per acre prices were few and far between. In this case, farmers weren't the land buyers and won't have to pay for the land based on commodity prices projected Tuesday by the USDA. USDA economists evaluated the size of the U.S. and global crops and said farmers could expect corn prices to average $3.35 to $3.95 per bushel for the current marketing year that ends in August, and soybeans will average $8.15 to $9.65. Someone doesn't buy farmland with those prices, much less cover the cost of producing those crops. The buyer of the farmland is Farmland Partners Incorporated, a publicly traded real estate investment trust based in Denver and owner of other farmland parcels in Illinois and 11 other states. Farmland Partners didn't reveal the names of sellers or individual purchase prices for the numerous parcels in the approximate 22,300-acre bundle, but the total purchase price was $197 million. Do the math, and that comes to just over $8,800 per acre, which isn't only a bargain at today's price, but likely for some time to come. Farmland Partners has a reputation of buying a highly productive farmland, not land that would be range land, timber, or in the USDA's conservation reserve. Farmland Partners turned back the clock since one would have to go back 6 or 7 years to find $8,800 as top price for farmland. Why would anyone want to sell their farmland for a price that's so much below today's auction values? Probably every different landowner in the bundle and number hasn't been revealed has their own reason. However, University of Illinois ag economist Todd Kutha, a specialist in farmland issues, said Farmland Partners typically rents back the farmland to owners who have conveyed the title to it. Kutha said the farm owner operator still has the farming operation, all his equipment, makes agronomic decisions, and still lives on the land. The only change is that he no longer has the land to sell or to mortgage. The owner, Kutha said, is compensated by windfall of cash, and the Farmland Partners relationship is similar to joint tenancy. What about farm operators whose landowner decided to sell the land to Farmland Partners? Does the operator lose the ability to farm it? Kutha said that in most cases it may be rented back to the operator, either with a cash lease or a flexible lease with a cash supplement. And where did Farmland Partners get the $197 million to buy the land? Farmland Partners is a publicly traded company which can sell shares. But Kutha said Farmland Partners also has been successful at getting funds from the government bond-funded Farmer Mac, which loans money for farmland purchases. Unlike Bennett, Farmland Partners probably didn't know the USDA was announcing monthly crop numbers and price estimates Tuesday. Growing and selling a crop is not a risk the company is going to take. That's the end of Ellis's article. On page A6, out of Seattle, AP, 20 years of gum scrapped. A piece of Seattle history is coming down, or rather 1 million little pieces. Crews are cleaning up the city's famed gum wall near Pike Place Market, where tourists and locals have been sticking their used chewing gum for the past 20 years. The wall is plastered with wads of gum in a kaleidoscope of colors, some stretched and pinched into messages, hearts, and other designs. People have also used the gooey gobs to paste up pictures, business cards, and other mementos. On Tuesday, powerful steam cleaners were melting it all off. Emily Crawford, a Pike Place Market spokeswoman, said that following a busy summer season, market leaders decided now was a good time to wipe the wall clean, but they expect people will start leaving gum on the space again soon. Crawford said the cleaning crew will collect and weigh the gum each day it's removed. The cleaning is expected to take 3 days. By Crawford's calculator, there's about 2,200 pounds of gum on the walls. End of that novelty. Out of the Tribune News Service, in Atlanta, Carter sees no spread of cancer. Former President Jimmy Carter is responding well to treatments for a cancer that has spread to the brain, and recent tests have shown there's no evidence of new malignancy, the Carter Center said Tuesday. Carter, 91, announced in August he'd been diagnosed with melanoma, skin cancer that has progressed to his brain and liver. Doctors have discovered four small spots of melanoma on his brain, but have told Carter they are treatable. The former president has hardly slowed his pace since the cancer diagnosis. He had planned to be in Nepal in October for a Habitat of Humanity bill, but after civil unrest threatened the project, he instead traveled to Memphis, Tennessee for his 32nd annual construction work for charity. He said at that build in Memphis that he hasn't changed his diet since becoming ill, and he and his wife, Roslyn, still keep up an active routine of riding bikes, hiking in the woods, and swimming in their hometown in Plains. He said he's lost about 5 pounds, explaining, "I don't eat as much as I was, but I'm definitely eat as much as I want." Still, he has showed signs of scaling down his work since the diagnosis. His grandson, former state senator Jason Carter, took over chairman of the Carter Center's board and led a trip this week to Myanmar to monitor the nation's historic elections. End of that article. Continuing in the life section of the Herald and Review, or continuing in the Herald Review going to the life section, we have lifestyle. Student identification kits, a benefit for all families. This is by Dave Fope, Charleston. Police need every tool they can get when a child is missing, and that means more than a photograph. That's why identification kits assembled for Carl Sandberg Elementary School first grader students also include other items and materials. Detective Marlon Williams of the Charleston Police Department said it's important for the kits to include such things as video recordings of the students. That not only shows what the children look like, but how they act, he explained. We want every tool available, Williams said. There may be something distinctive. A child's appearance can change, but mannerisms are typically consistent. The kits assembled include videos, photographs, fingerprints, and DNA samples from cheek swabs. The children's families then get the kits as an all-in-one packet that would be readily available if the need arises, Williams said. The Charleston Masonic Lodge has sponsored an ID kit program for about the last 5 years. Larry Drake, the program's director, said it's good to target younger students so their families will have the kits for all the years they're in school. The goal is to have the children's identification materials immediately available, so families don't have to take the time to search for photographs or come up with other information, he said. Drake encouraged parents to make copies of the disc with the videos and give them to other family members who care for their children. Parents of 80 of Carl Sandberg's 180 first graders signed permission slips to allow their children to receive the kits. Drake said that's close to the response rate for the program during past years, but organizers would like to see more participate. It seems a shame for those kids to miss out, adding that all parents have to do is sign the permission slips. Williams said police would also like to see more families take part in the program. He said some parents might be hesitant because they think it's time-consuming, but they need only to provide a minimal amount of information, and we take care of the rest. End of the article. That ends the Herald and Review e-edition for today. Continuing on with the Decatur Tribune online, we have the Congressman's response. Davis issues statement on President Obama's rejection of Keystone XL pipeline. Washington, D.C. U.S. Representative Rodney Davis, Republican, Illinois, today, November 6th, released the following statement after President Obama announced he'll reject the construction of the Keystone XL pipeline. Today, President Obama chose politics over people, said Davis. I'm certainly not surprised by his decision, but I'm extremely disappointed. We continue to see the impact this administration's attack on our energy sector is having on Illinois families. It seems like every other week there's another announcement about a coal mine or a power plant forced to close because of the new rules and regulations coming from the executive branch. Instead of encouraging energy independence and job growth within this industry, the president continues to placate his political base. The Keystone XL pipeline has support of business and labor groups alike, and it's estimated to create more than 40,000 jobs. Those are construction jobs, I believe. Davis has long been a supporter of Keystone XL and has called on the president to approve its construction. City Beat, Paul Osmond's City Beat. First headline in that column, Preston Jackson's downtown Civil War sculpture now has a fitting plaque. If you haven't walked by the Preston Jackson sculpture in the 300 block of North Water Street lately, you might want to take a few minutes to check out the plaque that's been installed on it. As the photo above shows, the plaque with the appropriate wording is now on the sculpture, and I'm not alone in being very pleased about it. It says, "From the cotton field to the battlefield, dedicated on August 1, 2009, in honor of the thousands of African American soldiers who fought in the Civil War in defense of equal rights for all, created by Preston Jackson." Decatur native and artist. Obviously, since the dedication ceremony was held over 6 years ago, it's been a long time coming. Special thanks to City Manager Tim Gleason and Assistant City Manager Billy Tyus for making it happen. I wrote my concerns about the lack of identification of the sculpture, along with the faded-looking Lincoln storyboard, several times in this column in recent months. I also talked to the city manager about it not very long after he was hired earlier this year. He told me he'd take care of it, and Tyson also indicated to me that the neglect would be resolved. I was mayor when we commissioned the Preston Jackson sculpture and also authorized the Looking for Lincoln storyboards to show how important connections to Abraham Lincoln in our downtown. All right, start that again. I was mayor when we commissioned the Preston Jackson sculpture and also authorized Looking for Lincoln storyboards to show important connections to Abraham Lincoln in our downtown area. I always felt a little sad that Preston Jackson, a famous artist and Decatur native, was not recognized for his talent through a plaque identifying the sculpture. So I had a special interest in seeing the identification placed on the sculpture, and from the reaction of many readers, they also felt that Preston Jackson had been slighted, and several even offered to contribute toward the purchase of a plaque. After I posted the photos of the sculpture and plaque on our Facebook page, former Decaturite Samianne Robbins, who now lives in Northwest Indiana, about 5 minutes from Purdue North Central Campus Road, there are two huge pieces of Preston's work here, and each has a plaque, such as the one Decatur has finally added. A few years ago, he had showing there of his sculptures and paintings. We talked before his presentation. We laughed over stories about our far-out art teacher, Miss Bleeks, at Decatur High School. I mentioned going back to Decatur and seeing his piece and asked why there was no plaque. He was a little concerned about that, too. I know he must be very happy now. Osborne continues, "It was nice to chat with Cindy Diedrich Wolfer, who came to the Tribune last week to touch base on why she's running as Republican candidate for state representative in the 96th Illinois House District. That seat is presently held by Democrat Sue Scher of Decatur. Cindy was elected to the first of her two terms on the Decatur Park District Board of Commissioners about the same time I was elected to my first term as mayor in 2003. And has an extensive background in business and working with various organizations to move the community ahead and over the next years. I'm not sure if she'll be the only Republican candidate. There's been some rumblings that a person who lives in Springfield may also run as a Republican in this race, which would necessitate a Republican primary. The 96th Illinois House District includes Macon, Christian, and Sangamon County. While I'm on the subject of the 96th House seat, Senator Representative Sue Scher will be coming to the Tribune this week to update me on what's happening in the district. Don't think she made the appointment because of Dietrich Wolfer's announcement that she's a candidate against Scher. Sue made this appointment a week or two before Dietrich Wolfer's announcement, and she's been good about coming in and touching bases about what's going on in our district and in Springfield during the years she has served as state representative. That is the end of what we will be reading out of the Decatur Tribune and the end of part two of the Decatur Herald and Review and Decatur Tribune for Wednesday, November 11th, 2015. This is Debbie saying talk again to you soon.